Welcome. We purposely started late because this was a test of your patience. Since we have been teaching you about forgiveness, we wanted to see if you were going to get upset, if you're going to become intolerant, if you were going to start cursing us. Why are they late? What's wrong with them? So, if you were thinking that way, then you have not benefited from all these classes. And if you weren't thinking that way, then you're doing well. You're making progress. Of course, I'm only joking, but I did go to a seminar in which they set up a fake exercise. They told us we were going to do something, but they never made us do it, and they wanted us to see how we were going to be thinking. Not how we were going to be thinking, but they wanted to see what we were thinking, and they had us write down what we were thinking. So that was a little joke. We're always having technical difficulties for some reason, so we apologize for that. We were actually in the studio a half hour before the showtime, but we were having problems with the computer. So today is a momentous occasion. We finished 11 sessions on forgiveness, and now we're going into the sequel. And what is the sequel? It is dealing in a proper way with devotees. As devotees, we generally term this offenses, offending devotees. But part of the process, or the way we're going to look at it, is how to behave properly, or how to behave respectfully, to be grateful and appreciate other devotees. So I'm looking forward to this. I think it's going to be extremely beneficial. And why do I say that? Well, Srila Prabhupada has told us that we can destroy our bhakti by offending devotees. So we don't even want to come close to offending devotees. We want to develop proper attitudes in dealing with devotees, so we only see the positive or see the good. And so you may think, well, that's pretty elevated. It's said that the pure devotee in Krishna himself, he only sees the good in others. So just imagine, if you only saw the good in others, you never saw the bad, even if they were doing something bad, you never saw it. You never focused on it, you only saw the good. That would be wonderful. And you say, oh, impossible, can't do that, that's not going to happen. But look at it this way. If you see the good in others, that will benefit you, because you'll become inspired by the good. If you see the bad in others, that will just disturb you. It certainly won't benefit you. It will definitely hurt you, and it will definitely disturb you. So in every person there is good. And so if you look at it in that way, sadhu sangha, association with devotees, is meant to inspire us. So obviously, if it's meant to inspire us, we're not going to be looking at the bad things, the things that are wrong with devotees. We're going to be looking at their good qualities, because it's the good qualities that will inspire us. So even if you don't like somebody, even if how they think, how they speak, how they act disturbs you, certainly you can find something good. And if you notice what's good, you remind yourself, if I notice the good, this person's association will help me. And there's absolutely no benefit whatsoever in seeing the negative or finding faults, unless I'm in a position where it's my duty to find faults. And sometimes you may have that position, but generally I don't think we have that. So I want to welcome Manjesh and Tilak and Vermin and Mahi and all of you who are out there. If you would like to enter the chat, and Yadevi, if you'd like to enter the chat, you can do that by going to what, Uddhava? He's going to show us, for all of those of you who are not on chat, who would like to be on chat, you can ask questions, you can discuss things. You go to Krishna.com, and then you go to view, where when you look right under me, you see live chat room. Amazing. That's really easy. Okay, right under me there it says live chat room. You click on that, and the password is Radhe. That's always the password. All devotional service goes through Radharani. If we get Radharani's mercy, then Krishna is pleased. So that is definitely the password, no question. Okay, now, what I decided to do tonight was reveal something very heavy. And this sets the foundation of understanding why forgiveness is important. You may be aware of the story of Subhara Muni. And so Subhara Muni had offended. Who did he offend? Anybody know? Who did he offend? Subhara Muni was living, I'll give you a hint. He was living in a lake. I believe the Jamuna, perhaps. And Krishna has a bird carrier. Hint. And that bird carrier, even though he's a servant of Krishna, he eats fish. And he was coming into that lake to eat fish. And so Subhara Muni, taking compassion on the fish, prevented Garuda, that's his name, Garuda. Yes, Manjesh, Garuda. He prevented Garuda. Garuda from taking any fish from the lake, and because Garuda is the carrier of Vishnu, a devotee, that was an offense. Now, a very interesting thing happened to Subhara Muni. I'm just telling the story very briefly. We will most likely talk about it in greater depth. But what happened was, he was doing his meditation in the water, and he saw two fish hugging and kissing. And I don't know if you've ever seen fish hugging and kissing, making love, but he saw them, or making more than love, making lust in a big way. It actually disturbed him. It disturbed him so much that within his heart he developed the desire to marry, and he had been practicing as a yogi austerities for a very long time. In those days, we're talking thousands of years. So he was very powerful, very self-controlled and very disciplined, but seeing the fish disturbed him so much that he gave up that yoga practice to search for a wife. So if you look at that, you think, oh, how could that be true? How could somebody that powerful see some fish kissing? I mean, I've seen, I don't know if you've ever seen, so many animals kiss. Have you ever seen that movie on The March of the Penguins or whatever it's called? It shows the mating of penguins and how they're kissing. And you know, so many animals they kiss. Sometimes it was just somewhere, I think. I forget where horses were kissing. I don't know. But, so, you know, we see these things, and we don't become upset, and we're not great yogis. So it's kind of, you wonder, well, how could that possibly happen? And the only explanation we can give is that because he offended Garuda, that incident of seeing the fish became the cause of fall down. Actually, the cause of the fall down was the offense, but that was used as a vehicle. Otherwise, there's no way that such a great sage would see some fish and he would become so disturbed that he would give up all his yoga practice and leave and go to the king in the local area and say, I want to marry your daughter. Can you imagine somebody seeing some fish and giving up everything they devoted their life to for thousands of years? It's not possible. It doesn't happen. Could you imagine you were accused of rape and then you were testifying in court and you said, and you explained, well, it was the fish, I saw the fish. And then I couldn't control myself. Is anybody going to believe that? Of course not. They think this guy's completely crazy. He saw some fish kissing and that developed within his heart such an intense desire for the opposite sex that he ended up raping a person. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't happen. So, what is the point we're making here? Is that Vaishnava aparadha is so serious that even someone as powerful as Subhara Muni could fall down from his position just by seeing some fish and give up this very elevated yogic state that he achieved after thousands of years of practice. I mean, just imagine what to speak of thousands of years, if you practice doing something for 20 years and basically you focused your life on doing something for 20 or 30 or 40 years, you're not going to just want to give it up. You know, you've become adept at it after all those years of practice. You're not just going to want to give it up on a whim. That's the power of Vaishnava aparadha. That's something that was so important to this person, which was his self-realization. He gave it up. So it was all due to that offense. So the point of the story and the point that Prabhupada often makes is that on one side, you can be following the practices of bhakti, but if on the other side you commit offense, it undermines or undoes all the positive. Or it may not fully undermine it, but it undermines it enough that you're not reaping much, if any, benefit from the positive. And I don't know if I mentioned this to you, but there's a purport in which Prabhupada outlines the practices of bhakti, you know, the traditional practices we follow. Hearing, chanting, associating with devotees, following principles, and so forth. And he said, if you do these, you will become Krishna conscious. And then he ends the sentence, if you don't offend devotees. So in other words, what he's saying, you do A, B, C, D, and E, and it becomes effective if you don't offend devotees. If you offend devotees, then you've undone everything. So it's more powerful, in a sense. The offense to Vaishnava is more powerful. How should I say it? More powerful than the process. It can undo the process. Now, the converse situation is true in that we advance through the association and mercy of the devotee. So offense to a Vaishnava means to their mercy is withheld, and not just their mercy, but mercy of many Vaishnavas. So we depend on mercy. So that's just that's the foundation. I want to scare you a little bit. Have you ever seen ads in which they scare you? You know, they say, if you're 50 years old and you live this lifestyle, then it's guaranteed you will get this disease, or it's guaranteed you will die at this time, or if you're overweight more than 20 pounds, there's a 90% chance you will have a heart attack in the next 10 years. Sometimes you read ads like this because if they can instill fear, then that will cause you to do something, take interest. You know, oh, I don't care. I don't care about this. I don't care about that. And then they scare you. And then you're like, well, this is serious. Maybe I should take this herb or vitamin. Maybe I should read this book. I read that heart disease is the number one killer. And they have statistics that it, you know, kills more people than were killed in all the wars in the history of the world, or something like that. And you're either going to die from heart attack or cancer or this or that. So you're just scared, you know, take care of yourself. Take this herb, take this program, this diet. So I was using the same advertising technique on you. I want to scare you. Not actually, I'm not using it, but that's actually a fact. So the Shastra explains that way to sober us up. Say, look it. You think you can get away with this? Now, another thing that Prabhupada said about Vaishnava aparadha, he said, whatever advancement you make in Krishna consciousness, it's always there. It's, as the example is, the bank account. You put the money in there. The deposits have been made. But Prabhupada said, if you commit offense, you may not be able to access that bank account for some time. It's the offense. You think, okay, I'm doing all this bhakti and I've advanced and I have these deposits, but then I commit offense and now I have no access. So although I'm a wealthy man, I now become poor because I have no access to my money. So it's something like that, that when we commit offense, we don't have access to our spiritual deposits. So it's pretty serious. We really need to guard ourselves against it. So now, I remembered this afternoon that I had once written an article on Vaishnava Aparadha, and it's a very good article, and I thought we would start this course by reading and discussing this article because it has many of the foundational principles upon which our further courses will be built upon. So if you go to www, and Madhurya Leelananda Devidasi and Kremlin 69, are you from Russia? Oh, you're just thinking about Russia. So, if you go to my website and you go to articles, yes, and then you go, no, I'm sorry, not articles. Go to newsletters. So you go www.tstrain.com. You don't have to, but if you want to, we're going to be reading from this article. And it's entitled, very interesting title, which I could have titled this course. It's called, Who Are You Offending? It's issue number 37. Who Are You Offending? So if you like to access that, you can download that article. I'll give you all a little time. The link, are you putting the link there for everybody to see? There's the link. You can just click on the link. So if any of you who are not on chat, if you go on chat, you can access the link now, and you can read along with this article. So, I'm going to wait a minute, because I don't want to offend any of you by starting before you're ready. And of course, you don't have to download this, it's just, or you can download it later. I'm not going to read exactly verbatim. I'm going to read from it, then I'm going to discuss it. We may not even get through the whole article because there's a lot to discuss here. And I want to help you enter into a deeper understanding of the importance of the mercy, of receiving the mercy of the Vaishnavas and how to receive that mercy, and to receive the mercy of all Vaishnavas, not just superior Vaishnavas. But especially, we want to be careful not to offend superior Vaishnavas, because the more advanced the Vaishnava, the greater the offense. But also we want to recognize that the mentality to offend others, it's a mentality, and it may strike a senior devotee, it may strike a junior devotee, but that mentality is the problem. And if we change the mentality, then will be in a safer position. Okay, so I'm going to begin reading this article. Now, the time I wrote this article, I was doing a lot of japa workshops and teaching about japa. So I begin this article by explaining the relationship between japa and Vaishnava Aparadha. And of course, as we know, one of the offenses to the holy name is, who knows one of the offenses to the holy name that relates to relationships, relates to devotees, how we relate to other devotees. What is it? Can somebody type it in? It begins with the word to. Anybody know? Or could you guess? An offense to the holy name that relates to how we deal with devotees. Who can tell me? Oh, Kremlin 69 is from the Ukraine. That explains it all. Okay. To blaspheme the devotees who've dedicated their lives? Yes, there it is. Manjesh. To blaspheme the devotees who've dedicated their lives for propagating the holy name of the Lord. So that's an offense. So I thought it was appropriate, as I was teaching about the holy name, to address this offense, because it's so disastrous for our bhakti, and it's so, in a sense, effortless to do it, because our conditioned nature is such that we can be very critical of others. So let's begin. I am writing about Vaishnav Aparad in this issue. Why? Because I want to help you chant better. What does Aparad have to do with chanting? Everything. Attempts to improve chanting and to improve in devotional service in general will be undermined if we allow ourselves to offend devotees. Also, I recently had a bout with Vaishnav Aparad that was quite instructive. I want to share this with you. So this article is entitled, Who Are You Offending? Because I'm asking that question for you to consider. Are you offending, not only with words, but in your mind? Are you offending words, mind, body? Who are you offending? Are you offending him? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, now pay attention, this is very heavy. Those who worship me directly, but neglect my devotees, are in illusion and cause me pain. Wow. Those who worship me directly, you're worshiping Lord Chaitanya, but neglect my devotees, are in illusion and cause me pain. Their offerings feel like a shower of burning cinders on my body. I won't even read that again, it's too heavy. You might have nightmares. He who criticizes and offends my devotees will be destroyed by chanting my name. Hare Krishna. He who criticizes and offends my devotees will be destroyed by chanting my name, the very name that is full of mercy and compassion. If we offend another devotee, we'll be destroyed by chanting that name. Amazing. Give up criticizing Vaishnavas and take shelter of my name. So, incredible. Wow, we can become destroyed by chanting Hare Krishna. Here's another good one. Even if one worships the Lord for millions of lifetimes, if he continues to offend devotees, it will be impossible to gain the Lord's mercy. If he continues to offend devotees, it will be impossible to gain the Lord's mercy. So let's turn it around. How to gain the Lord's mercy? Well, what's the opposite of offending devotees? Serving them, appreciating them, glorifying them, seeing their good qualities. How do you do that? How do you do that? Okay, I want to tell you something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that is so, that cuts right to the very gist of this whole problem. And I think you should write this down somewhere. If you have a pen or paper handy, I'll wait a few seconds. Find a pen and paper and write this down. It'll really, really change your attitude towards devotees. If you don't have a good attitude, it will change it for the good. And if you have a good attitude, it will improve it. So here we're saying we can be destroyed by chanting the Lord's name if we offend devotees, and if we offend devotees even we worship the Lord, it'll be impossible to gain the Lord's mercy. So what is causing that offense? Well, one of the things, or the foundational or essential thing that's causing it, was stated by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and when he said, unless we are willing to look at our own faults, to look at ourselves, we will never stop criticizing others. Unless we are willing to look at our own faults, we will not stop criticizing others. What does that mean? Well, think about it. If we are criticizing others, if we're seeing others' faults, that means at least at that moment, we're not looking at our own faults. Now let me ask you a question. What would be more beneficial for your spiritual advancement? To look at how you could improve, or to look at how someone else can improve? To look at what's wrong with you, where are your defects, or to look at what's wrong with someone else? answer is obvious, isn't it? So, what does humility mean? How do we define humility? We're asked to chant the holy names in a humble state of mind. What does Lord Chaitanya mean by that? Well, one of the things he says is to not want honor for myself, but to give honor to others. Now, to not want honor for myself, if you take it, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta is saying here, humility means not only do I not want honor for myself, because I don't feel that I deserve it, but I am conscious of what's wrong with me, and I am working on improving that. Now, many of us find it difficult to acknowledge what's wrong with ourselves. We find it difficult to acknowledge the dark things within ourselves. But we don't find it so difficult to notice or acknowledge those same things in other people. Have you ever noticed that? Have you ever noticed that sometimes somebody does something and it really upsets you? And it occupies your mind and you may be thinking about it for days, or when they're doing that, it just really bothers you? Have you ever noticed that? Well, you know why? I believe it was Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, because I am so honeycombed with faults, I see those faults in others. So it's because we find it easier to notice the defects of others rather than the defects in ourselves. But if somebody's defects really upsets us, it's likely, if not 100% certain, that we have that same defect. Now you may say, well, I'm not sure I have that defect. That may be because you have not acknowledged it. Or it may be because you're suppressing it and you don't want to deal with it. But it's very important to at least reflect on this principle. If someone else is bothering you, it's probably because you have a similar or the same problem and you're not dealing with it. If you're dealing with that and you're working on it and you're acknowledging it and going through processes to purify yourself, then when you see it in another person, it won't upset you. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, when he saw devotees criticizing, he said, don't allow others' faults, I didn't say this exactly this way, but don't allow others' faults to harm you. They cannot harm you unless you allow them. So we're seeing another's faults and it's harming us. Unless we look at our own faults, we cannot stop looking at the faults of others. So this is really what humility is about. You know, many of us talk about humility, but in our heart of hearts, we wonder, what is it really all about? Well, here is a definite aspect of humility. It's the willingness to look at what's wrong with me. And if you look at what's wrong with yourself, in the mood of dealing with it, facing it, confronting it, then you can work through it and you can improve yourself. And then that defect actually empowers you. Whereas if you neglect it, it plays out. It stays there. The disease remains. By neglecting it or being in denial of it, it doesn't go away. It plays out. And then therefore you look around and you're being disturbed by others. You're being more focused on what others are doing. But we need to be, you and I need to be focused on what's wrong with us. We don't need to be focused on what's wrong with others. Okay, Kremlin 69 is asking a question. If we ever did offend a devotee by commission or omission, how do we properly repent and avoid bad karma? Bhaktivinoda Thakur advises that you must go to that devotee and ask for forgiveness. That's, you say, I offended you and I beg your forgiveness. And if he won't forgive you, you keep begging and beg Krishna and do what you can. When we offer obeisances to the devotees every morning, we were instructed early on in the movement, at that time after we offer that prayer, we say, "My dear Vaishnavas, please forgive me for any offenses I may have committed." We always want to be asking to be forgiven for any offenses we may have committed. Sometimes we commit offenses unknowingly, as you point out. So it's very healthy just to pray to all the Vaishnavas, "Oh, Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, please forgive me for any offenses I may have committed." Sometimes we offend people unknowingly. But maybe we didn't do anything wrong, but they were offended. So that there's still a reaction for that. So we pray to all the Vaishnavas, and then you can go to a person if you know you offended them, or you feel that it seems like they've been offended by something you did. Although you meant no offense, you may request their forgiveness. And if someone comes to you to request forgiveness, you should always give it. Okay. And yes, as you mentioned here, repent. You know what Prabhupada says about repentance? He uses the word regret. And regret is very powerful. He said, if we do something sinful, we do something wrong, we should regret having done it. Because regret, within regret, is reformation. If I regret doing something, it creates an emotional or a subtle psychological barrier from doing that same thing again. And it creates or it sets in motion a psychology or a nature to improve. I regret having done this. I don't want to do it again. It was so bad. And I want to improve myself to make sure that I have not done that again. That is what Prabhupada advises us. Another thing that Prabhupada advises us is that in assessing our position, as we're saying, assess your position, be open to it. One of the ways Prabhupada advises us to assess our position is by writing that a few years ago, before we were devotees, we were in a very fallen condition, and we have been saved by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And therefore, we should always understand that we have been saved and we're really not better than anybody. And we should understand we can also easily fall back into that. So we should not become proud. He said, we should always remember that just like we see so many non-devotees with so many bad habits, we should always remember we were like that. And we can easily be that way again if we give up Krishna consciousness. So, let's go on reading. So we're reading from the fourth paragraph. So the question is, who are you offending? Of course, I'm not assuming you are offending anyone. That would be offensive of me. I am just asking. Just as we go to the doctor or dentist for regular checkups, we need to regularly check ourselves to look in our hearts and ask, is there any particular devotee or group of devotees that I have a tendency to offend? You may think, no, I have given up offending devotees. I don't do that anymore. But remission is always possible. So don't go without your regular checkup. So the whole idea of asking who are you offending is to really look deeply. Do you have ill feelings towards any Vaishnavas? Are the activities of certain Vaishnavas or group of Vaishnavas, even an organization of Vaishnavas, upsetting you to the point that you're critical? Are you thinking it's okay to be critical of them because they are like this? You want to rationalize. I don't think there's a good rationale. Generally, in most circumstances, there's not a good rationale. So you want to look at relationships with Vaishnavas, with organizations, Vaishnava organizations, superiors who may have let you down and so forth, and just say, am I in any way, do I in any way have negative feelings towards them? Am I in some way offending them? How do we know? Well, it is said that if you take it to the most subtle level, it is said that if you see another devotee and you're not happy to see that devotee, that's considered an offense. You see another devotee and you think, oh no, here comes so-and-so, she or he is so this or so that or such a this. Oh, I hope she doesn't talk to me. I hope he doesn't talk to me. He is like this, he is like that. That's considered an offense. Maybe not a great offense, but an offense. So when we see another devotee, we should be happy. Here is another devotee of the Lord. That's the proper way to greet a devotee. So we're asking here, are you offending on a certain level? Are you offending? And there's this story you may have heard, this wonderful story. Rupa Goswami was chanting, I believe he was chanting japa. His eyes were closed, and while he was chanting, a crippled man was walking by him. And right while he was walking by him, Rupa Goswami was meditating on a very funny pastime of Krishna. So he was laughing, and the crippled man thought he was laughing at him, and he took offense. Although there was no offense on Rupa Goswami's part, but he took offense. So Rupa Goswami came to know that, and someone told him that, I think you've offended this person. And so he asked, I believe Sanatana Goswami, he asked, what do I do now? He said, hold a festival and invite all the Vaishnavas of Vrindavan to come. And the one person who doesn't come, that will be the man you offended, then you can ask for forgiveness. So he didn't consciously offend the person, but the person was offended. So he's very subtle. We should be happy to see the Vaishnavas. We should appreciate Vaishnavas. We should respect them. Sometimes we have to appreciate from a distance, but we want to keep proper respect. It's very important, proper attitude. Okay. Let's describe what an offense is. You're probably asking. A question is here. Manjess is asking, can we address the devotees in general and make a general request for forgiveness? Yes. As I was saying, you can do that. Manchakapa turubhyas cha kripa sindubhyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. We offer that prayer every morning. Prabhupada advised us we should offer that prayer every morning. And then after we offer that prayer, offer respects to all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. That is a prayer of offering respects to all the Vaishnavas. Then we can ask all the Vaishnavas to forgive us. And if you have a bad relationship with any Vaishnava, then I suggest at that time when you're offering respects, you focus on that Vaishnava and offer respects to that person and appreciate that person. It'll be very helpful for you to appreciate any devotee that you have any difficulty with. It's very, very, appreciation is very powerful. It's very powerful purifying agent. So if somebody, you just don't like them so much for some reason, or their attitudes bother you or whatever, at least appreciate them. And in your mind, tell them, if I've ever offended you, please forgive me. And all Vaishnavas, if I've ever offended you, knowingly or unknowingly, please forgive me. We are meant to be in that mood. Because then the path is clear. And then we get the mercy of we want the mercy of the Vaishnavas. We don't want the curse of the Vaishnavas. Nimbasu Bhadra has joined us. Scott has joined us. Fantastic. Okay. So what is an offense? In Sanskrit, offense is the word is used, aparad. So what does that mean? Aparad literally means to be distanced from worship. Radha Aradha means to worship. And apa means to distance from worship. So what does that mean? In other words, offenses to devotees distance us from devotional service, distance us from the worship of Sri Radha, whom all worship. Distance us from the worship of Sri Radha, whom all worship, and service to Krishna goes through. So certainly we don't want to be distanced from Radharani. All our service to Krishna goes through Radharani. If we please Radha, Krishna is pleased. So we're going to tell you how to chat Nimba Subhadra. I also like to define aparad as to be distanced from affection. That's interesting, isn't it? To be distanced from affection. Why? Because aparad can only take place where affection is lacking. In other words, if you notice in your life, if you really have affection, deep affection for someone, it's practically impossible to offend them. You just don't have the desire. It's the people that you really don't like, you really don't have affection towards or appreciation towards. Those are the ones that we tend to offend or be critical of or judge. So if we increase our affection somehow, show affection or develop affection for other devotees, then we will not commit aparad. So aparad also means to be distanced from affection. The more we're distanced from that affection, the more chance there will be to criticize. Conversely, where there is affection, there will not be offense. In his last days, Srila Prabhupada asked forgiveness from his godbrothers and godnephews for the offenses he made while preaching, as he sometimes pointed out what he saw as deviations from the order of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. They immediately replied that everything he did was only out of love for Guru and Krishna. And thus he never made any offense. In other words, they acknowledged that Srila Prabhupada did not envy or disrespect his godbrothers, and that whatever he said against them was done out of love and affection for Guru and Gauranga. Aparad takes root in the soil of envy. Although we are advised to avoid criticism of another Vaishnava, it is really ill-motivated criticism based on a lack of affection and respect that is considered aparad. If you have affection for someone, you show that affection through acts of service, appreciation, respect, and intimate exchange, not through offense. So when affection and respect for someone is low, we are more likely to offend them, or perhaps guaranteed to offend them. Let's again go back to this point Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made, because I think it really encompasses the essence of everything we need to learn about this. If we're not looking at how to improve ourselves, then inevitably we're going to be looking at what's wrong with others. Now, if you look at how to improve yourself, if your focus is on how to improve yourself, you know through experience and also what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that he will give you the intelligence to deal with your excuse me. He'll give you the intelligence to deal with your internal problems. Is there any water here? Or can there be? It's my personal experience. If I confront issues that I have, Krishna gives me all kinds of intelligence. And he reveals why these issues exist. And he reveals to me how I can alter my thinking to be able to deal with them. And sometimes when I'm praying or asking Krishna for guidance, within a matter of seconds, there's a change of attitude. And the little voice says, this is how you should think. This is how you should deal with the situation. But you see, in order to do that, you have to acknowledge that there is a problem. You have to acknowledge that you're not thinking in a proper way. So often what will happen is we'll become envious of someone, or jealous, or critical, or offensive, or resentful. And we won't step back and look at that and say, this is not right. I'm a devotee. I should not act this way. We won't step back and look and ask ourselves, why am I doing this? And how can I stop doing this? And how can I turn this around and do the exact opposite? But rather than look at that, we'll continue to do it. As if we cannot act in any other way but then be critical. Or as if it's just part of me, it's just the way I am. But if the way I am is not in line with spiritual principles, then a red flag should go off in our mind, in our heart, that says, you have to change. So often that red flag doesn't go off. That's the problem. And we can continue with one problem for years and years and years, and we wonder, why is the problem there? Why isn't it going away? Because we're not addressing it. We're not. Maybe you know it exists and you're not addressing it. Maybe you don't even know it exists, or you're not becoming conscious of it. You know it exists, but you're not. At the same time, you're not conscious of it. Your awareness is not focused on the need to improve. Have you ever had, any of you ever had the realization that you become aware of a certain inadequacy or a problem you have or a discrepancy, and then you realize that you've had this, or you've been acting in this way for years and years, and you've never noticed it, and you've never done anything about it, or you kind of noticed it, but you never did anything? Any of you out there ever had that experience? Where you become aware that you're doing something wrong, or you become aware that you're mistreating somebody, or you're mistreating yourself, or you become aware of a certain behavior or a certain attitude after years? Anybody out there have that? Then you're kind of shocked that it's taken that long to acknowledge it? Or are you all still in the dark? No one's had that experience? You must have had some experience with that. You become aware. Well, if you chant your rounds really well, you'll definitely become aware of your faults, I guarantee you. There's absolutely no question about it. You will become aware. Kremlin says he's guilty. Send the KGB after him. He's guilty. Lock him up. And give him only the holy name and the four regulative principles. So, I think we all have this experience. So, having had this experience, then it can inspire us to think, well, if it's taken me all these years to acknowledge a fault, if I'm more introspective, if I'm looking to find those faults, I could find them much more easily, much more quickly. And the more we do that, the more we will advance on the path of bhakti, because these anarthas in our heart can be dealt with, they need to be dealt with. I think what happens for a lot of people is when they recognize their anartha, they think, it's kind of that anartha is just kind of wedged in there, and it's just kind of become part of them. That's not true. It's not wedged in there. It's not part of you. It may be part of your conditioned nature, but you can deal with it. You can at least practice not acting on it. And I told something that Patanjali said. He said, I told this earlier, for those of you who haven't heard it, he said, whenever you find your mind thinking of something that you don't want to think of, thinking of something which is detrimental to you, he said, think of the exact opposite. Just turn it around 180 degrees. Think of the exact opposite thing. So In a similar way, if you find yourself acting in a way which is detrimental to yourself, to your spiritual advancement, to your service to Guru and Krishna, try acting in the 180-degree opposite way. There's a saying, you can't think yourself into acting differently, but you can act yourself into thinking differently. You like that? You can't think yourself into acting differently, but you can act yourself into thinking differently. I like that one. So, if my nature is, or my tendency is, to be critical, to be judgmental, to find fault, then let me act in the opposite way, which would be what? To appreciate. Say so-and-so. I really appreciate so-and-so because they're very good at this, or they have these particular qualities. That inspires me. I appreciate their dedication. I appreciate their honesty, their sincerity. So you do a 180-degree turnaround. Or there's somebody, and you're just, the person is upsetting you or disturbing you. You decide, I want to serve that person. We gave that quote to you, that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, we should only desire the highest good for our greatest enemy. So that's a turnabout. That's a total turnabout. So he's teaching us to act in the opposite. If the way we want to act is not Krishna conscious, then act in the exact opposite way. I don't like this person. Oh, you don't like that person? That's the person you should serve. This person upsets me. That's the person you should appreciate. You see? Act your way into thinking differently. Don't think your way into acting differently. Act your way into thinking differently. That's called sadhana. We start from the level of practice. And then if you do the practice, what happens? It becomes a habit. If you practice appreciation, if you practice looking at your own fault, if you, every time you see a fault in others, you say, ah, that is the fault that I have that I need to work on. If you practice that, it will gradually become a way, or an attitude, a way of thinking. That'll become an habitual way of thinking. You will act your way into a new way of thinking. That's what sadhana is all about. It's a practice. Just as we taught you in the course on forgiveness, we taught you how to practice living a life of forgiveness. You may be living a life of forgiveness, but you're not on the level of pure forgiveness. But you're practicing it. It's becoming a habit. It's becoming a way of life. It's becoming a way of dealing with people. Okay, Manjesh has a question. We're going to go a little bit longer because we started later, and I hope that's okay. If it's not, I will not be offended if you have to leave. Manjesh is asking, since this is the end of what? Well, the end of class. What about offending a third class devotee? Just wondering. In Shastra, maybe there are many stories of committing offenses against very, very advanced devotees. Very good question. Everyone give Manjesh a big round of applause. That was a very good question. In the Trinadapi Sunicena verse, we are taught to offer all respects to others. Those others are all others, not just devotees. Of course, devotees should always be offered respects. But in that verse, it is said we should offer respects to others. Sometimes we're asked, why don't we eat meat? I said, because we respect all living entities. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, when we apply the principles of not being critical, we apply that principle to non-devotees as well as devotees. Or to speak of third-class devotees, we apply that to people who are not even engaged in spiritual practice. One time, devotees were speaking to some professors and scientists, and the devotees remarked to Prabhupada, said, these people, they're very difficult to speak with because they're very proud. And Prabhupada said, they deserve to be proud because of what they've accomplished. So basically he was saying, you know, it's okay. You can respect that. They've achieved something. One time, a devotee asked Prabhupada, when they were first in India, they saw many sannyasis. As you know, it is said in scripture, when you see a sannyasi, a renunciate, a sadhu, you should offer your respects. Which, in this culture, means go down on the ground and pay your obeisances. So Mayavadis are not in the line of devotion, and they're sometimes even called offenders. So the devotee asked Prabhupada, should we offer them respect? He said, yes. Because you respect the fact that they're sannyasis, you respect the sannyas ashram. So my understanding of this is that if we are to develop an attitude and a habit of respect, of honoring others, of appreciating others, we have to develop that attitude across the board, towards everyone. You know, there's a saying, I think Kremlin 69, is there a saying like this in Russia? Something like this, you touch the feet of your superior and you punch the nose of your junior. Have you ever heard that? Did you say that in your country? There was a devotee from Ukraine, I think he told me that. We were talking about how there's certain people, towards their superiors, they're very respectful. And towards the juniors, they're very, they're just the opposite, you know, they totally overlord them. So I like that saying, you touch the feet of your superiors and punch the nose of your juniors. So the idea is, to develop the attitude of respect. Now, of course, if you offend what you call a third-class devotee, it's not as serious as offending a first-class devotee. So the Shastra says we should respect the spiritual master, the teacher, the mother, the father. We should respect them on the level of God. So these persons are worshipable superiors. So that's also part of culture. There are distinctions. But we're talking broadly here that the attitude of respect should be one for all living beings. And if we develop this attitude, I respect my guru, but I don't respect my godbrothers, or I don't respect juniors. Yes, and he said it sounds like a Russian idiom, yeah. You'll find that in many countries, you know, you'll find these people very respectful to superiors and very disrespectful to people below them. So, Scott is asking, recommended number of rounds. Yes, 64 rounds, take you 8 hours. If you can't do that, Prabhupada gave us 16. And if you can't do that, you start with one round and maintain that, and you build it up. That's the idea, something you can maintain. And recommended number of times you chant in the day? Yes, 24 hours, even while you're sleeping. Never stop chanting. That's what's recommended. Now, you have to figure out what you can do. But best to chant all your rounds at one time if you can. Okay, early in the morning. This is also good. I'm glad Scott brought this up, because I wanted to make the point that, you know, how we're talking about, you know, being respectful, honorable, appreciating others, and so you're sitting there thinking, well, this sounds like a pretty advanced level of spiritual consciousness. I mean, I'm a very sarcastic person. I tend to put people down and so forth. I tend to be, you know, have a very high estimation of my own self and my abilities. I tend to put other people down. And these are our conditioned nature. This is our conditioned nature. So how are we going to do all this? We're going to do all this through the mercy of the Holy Name. If you feel that this is difficult, it's all the more reason to take shelter of the Holy Name. And you approach the Holy Name and say, "My dear Holy Name, I can't do this. I'm a critical person. I tend to offend people. I'm not respectful all the time." You say, "Well, I don't offend people. I offend my wife. I get mad at my wife. I get mad at my husband. I offend my children. I offend people that I'm close with. You know, we're not perfectly respectful. Yes, I respect my mother, but I get mad at my wife. I'm not very nice to my wife." So, and I hear Mahatma saying, respect everybody. Respect the people that you're closest to. Those are the most difficult people to respect. Respect everyone. How to do that? If you feel you can't, it's okay to feel you can't. Just as long as you feel that you can by the power of the Holy Name. If you feel you can't, okay, I can't do this. But Krishna, you can do it. You can help me. That faith is essential for this process. And if you have that faith and you pray to Krishna, you will see Krishna will change your mind and change your heart. Again, my point is, you have to want it. If you don't want it, I don't want to curse you, but if you don't want it, it's very likely that you can go on for years and years and years and your mentality remains the same. It's very likely. I have personal experience of this. A certain mentality, I'm sure you all have experience of this, a certain mentality continue years, year after year after year, and you're wondering when it's going to change. You have to want it to change. You have to be willing to work on it. You have to be willing to look at it. That's the real thing. And when you're willing to do that and you start working on it, then you're going to see it's going to change. It's going to get better. You are going to get better. I guarantee you that. You stick with me for the next few weeks, however long we do this. You have faith in Krishna, and you have the willingness to look at your anarthas, look at the things that are wrong in your heart. You have the willingness to open up to it, and the willingness to admit, yes, I am judgmental, I am critical, I am envious, I'm jealous, whatever it is you are that's causing you to in any way offend other devotees or belittle them, disrespect them. If you're willing to look at that and deal with it and acknowledge it, you're going to be amazed at how much improvement you're going to make in this next month or two. And also what's going to happen is your chanting is going to get better. Because when you can respect, what does Lord Chaitanya say? When you can respect all living entities, then you can chant 24 hours a day. When you become humble, you can chant 24 hours a day. You're going to make so much advancement, you're going to send me an email and say, "My dear Mahatma Prabhu, I can't stop chanting. Now that I've cleared my heart from its critical nature, I can't stop chanting. I got fired from my job. My wife kicked me out of the house. I'm living on the street. All I can do is chant. It's all your fault. I never want to hear you again." Don't worry, that won't happen too soon. And by the time it happens, you'll be ready to live in Vrindavan. So it'll be okay. Okay. So we're going to end here on that happy note. And unless someone has some pressing question they just have to ask, then we're going to see you next week. We're going to discuss this article in further detail. And I welcome you to read the article now. If you have any questions this week, you can. You can write me. Now, before I go, thank you, Jagadish. I'm full of bliss. Jagadish said, "You are joy," which is another way of saying, "You're full of bliss." Yes, you are too. You're all full of bliss. Last night on Monday, we started our first online course, interactive online course on forgiveness. And I have some good news for you. We have decided that we're going to do this course online 4 times a year. Summer, fall, spring, and winter. Because we want to give devotees opportunity to really deal, if they have resentment issues, to deal with them, like really deeply get into it and really resolve it. because it's a big stumbling block to bhakti. So those of you who are interested in taking this online course, which I'm giving along with Archana Siddhi, who is a counselor and has dealt with these issues for many, many years with her clients, who are mostly devotees, you can email me at mahat@aol.com, and I will give you more details. Give me an idea when you would like to take the class, and we'll put you on our mailing list. Or you can call 888-JAPA-108. Easy to remember. 888-JAPA-108. That is the direct line for Bhagavad Life, who is sponsoring. They sponsor the Japa retreats. They're also sponsoring, putting on these online courses. And in the future, we will have other online courses on other subjects, which we will reveal to you over time. But we first decided we want to keep this as a mainstay, because it's very important. 888-JAPA-108. If you can't remember that, take some ginkgo biloba. It's good for memory. Even I can remember that, and I'm getting older. We came up with that number, so it would be easy to remember. Japa 108. Okay, so thank you, everyone, and we'll see you next week. Hare Krishna.